Since the dawn of civilization, spies of every nation and culture have worked to infiltrate their adversaries and glean the information that will give their side the advantage. The stakes are sky high, the strategies varied and imaginative, and the ultimate sign of success is that no one ever even knew you were there. In each episode, we will explore the moral and ethical gray zones of espionage, where treachery and betrayal go hand in hand with cunning and courage. This is the Spycraft 101 podcast. Welcome to your clandestine classroom. This is episode number 108 of the Spycraft 101 podcast. Today's episode is another solo episode where I share some of my own research with you. This is the story of Jamal Khashoggi, a Saudi journalist and dissident who was murdered in 2018 after being lured into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey. But before we get into this discussion, I want to say a big thank you to everyone listening who is also supporting me on Patreon, including James H. and Brian A. Your monthly contributions there help me keep this podcast going week in and week out. As a way of thanking my patrons, I offer a lot of great freebies and promotions, including free and discounted books and products from the Spycraft 101 store. Patrons also get exclusive access to long-form articles of mine that aren't available anywhere else. If you haven't signed up for my Patreon yet, but you want to, just click the link in the show notes on whatever podcast platform you're listening to right now. Jamal Khashoggi was a journalist and editor with a number of different news organizations in the Arab world from the mid-1980s up through the time of his death. He covered the Russian occupation of Afghanistan and even interviewed his fellow Saudi citizen Osama bin Laden on several occasions, years before he became known to the world at large. Jamal was also, for many years, a close confidant of the Saudi royal family, including Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. But by 2017, he'd fallen out of favor with the family after he spoke out about a crackdown on journalists within the kingdom. Jamal was a left-wing progressive by the standards of the kingdom and advocated for women's rights and for free speech for all Saudi citizens. He moved to the United States but wrote numerous opinion pieces critical of Saudi policies and actions, which were published in the Washington Post. In October 2018, he was in Istanbul, Turkey, visiting his fiancée, Hatice Cengiz. She was a 36-year-old PhD candidate he'd met just a few months earlier, but they were already planning to get married. The pair scheduled an appointment at the Saudi consulate there so he could obtain a document certifying his divorce from his first wife in order to clear the way to marry Hatice in Turkey. On his first visit to the consulate the previous week, he'd been told to return a few days later in order to pick up the completed document. Around 1 p.m. on October 2nd, 2018, he approached the front gate of the consulate, accompanied by his fiancée. He left his two cell phones outside with her and walked inside alone. He was never seen alive again. Unbeknownst to Jamal, his first visit to the consulate in late September triggered a flurry of activity as the Saudi government quickly put together a plan for his second visit 4 days later. They had been trying to lure him out of the U.S. for quite some time and had finally accomplished it by telling him he could only submit the necessary documents through the consulate in his fiancée's home country of Turkey. On the morning of October 2nd, just a few hours before his second appointment, two different jets flew from Riyadh to Istanbul. There were 9 men on the first plane and 6 more on the second. The 15 men were a hand-picked team of operatives, which included 7 members of the Crown Prince's personal security detail, known as the Rapid Intervention Force, and a forensic scientist from the General Intelligence Directorate, who specialized in conducting autopsies on corpses. Some of the other men who flew in were affiliated with the Saudi Center for Studies and Media Affairs. The Rapid Intervention Force has also been called by another name, the Tiger Squad. It was formed around 2015 specifically to kidnap and kill Saudi dissidents and other figures who had angered or embarrassed the Crown Prince. There are believed to be around 50 men in the Tiger Squad, and according to several Saudi expats and dissidents, they have been involved in numerous killings, which were reported to be accidental deaths or natural causes rather than assassinations. Besides the operation against Khashoggi, they've been linked to the death of Prince Mansour bin Mokhran, who died along with seven others in a helicopter crash in November 2017. Shortly before his untimely death, the prince had sent a letter to nearly 1,000 other Saudi princes, urging them not to support Mohammed bin Salman's succession to the throne as crown prince. According to one report, the Black Hawk helicopter the prince was traveling in was shot down by a missile fired by Mishal Saad al-Bastani, a pilot and member of the Tiger Squad, who was later directly involved in Khashoggi's death. Prince bin Mokhran may have been fleeing the country at the time of his death because just 3 days beforehand, the Crown Prince began a massive purge of hundreds of government ministers, businessmen, and other princes under the auspices of an anti-corruption campaign. Nearly 400 people were rounded up and detained in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Riyadh beginning in early November 2017. Over the next 2 years, most of them reached settlements of one type or another with the Saudi government, and more than $100 billion was recovered for government treasuries, according to official statements. Meanwhile, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, or MBS as he is known in the public media, consolidated complete control over the Saudi security apparatus and continued his campaign against dissidents both inside and outside the kingdom. Besides Prince bin Mokhran, a judge named Suleiman Abdul Rahman Al-Thunivan was also killed, according to an anonymous source who spoke with the news site MiddleEastEye.net in October 2018, the same month that Jamal was killed. The source reported that Al-Thunivan was killed during a scheduled checkup with his doctor, which the Tiger Squad learned about in advance. They took steps to ensure he was injected with a deadly virus during the appointment, so it would appear he died of natural causes. The source for this information may have been Saad al-Jabri, another expat who fled the kingdom in 2017 and went to Canada after he was targeted by MBS. He later filed a lawsuit in court alleging a campaign of assassination and harassment by the Crown Prince. Al-Jabri also stated in an interview in February 2021 that one of his sons and one of his daughters were forbidden from leaving the kingdom, and he has been unable to contact them since 2020. Their fates are currently unknown. The Crown Prince's true rise to power began in 2015 and continues to this day. He is the seventh son of King Salman, who assumed the throne in 2015 as well. MBS has held several positions of power within the monarchy, and since 2022, has not only been the Crown Prince, but the Prime Minister of Saudi Arabia as well. His personal net worth is estimated to be around $25 billion. He's made significant moves on the international stage, most recently restoring diplomatic relations with Iran, which has been a major enemy of the kingdom for many years. He's also enacted some seemingly progressive reforms in the country, but still clearly rules with an iron fist and is not at all opposed to killing his enemies or anyone who threatens him. And in late 2017, Jamal Khashoggi moved from friend to foe in the eyes of MBS. Back at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul in 2018, there were a number of local Turkish citizens employed inside besides the Saudi government employees themselves, as is common for consulates and embassies all over the world. All the Turks were given the afternoon off unexpectedly and went home just before Jamal's scheduled appointment. They were told that an important delegation was arriving for meetings that afternoon, and they didn't need any further encouragement to take the rest of the day off for themselves. So by the time Jamal walked inside, only a small crew of ultra-loyal Saudi officials and killers were inside waiting for him. Just a few minutes after he entered the consul general's office, two of the newly arrived security men grabbed him and dragged him from the room. He was taken to another room and held down while at least a few of his fingers were cut off. It's been speculated that the fingers were kept as a trophy to take back to Saudi Arabia for presentation to the crown prince. After that, he was given some sort of sedative which rendered him unconscious, most likely morphine. He was then taken to a third room and laid on top of a table where he was killed and his body dismembered by the forensic scientist who was sent all the way from Saudi Arabia just for this purpose. From the moment he was grabbed, Jamal survived just approximately 7 more minutes. Then one of the Saudi operatives named Mustafa al-Madani put on some of Jamal's clothing and donned a wig and fake beard. He was of similar height, age, and weight as Jamal, so from a distance, he looked very similar. He left the consulate's rear entrance and appeared on camera as a means of creating a false alibi for everyone inside. He walked to the Blue Mosque where he went into a bathroom and changed into his regular clothing again before returning. How do we know all of this? Although the collection method is still not publicly known, Turkish investigators later revealed transcripts from an audio recording of the entire incident during the legal proceedings against the participants. There are several theories as to how they obtained the audio. Either the Turkish government had already bugged the consulate long before Khashoggi's first appointment, or perhaps they were surveilling it from outside using specialized equipment. It's also been suggested that they had gained access to one or more of the Saudi participants' phones, and the Saudis themselves had filmed the killing with their own phones as proof of the act. Every day, you're under attack, whether you realize it or not. Your digital devices contain your entire life, your finances, your conversations with friends and family, your interests, and even your movements. And all of that is vulnerable to an ever-expanding class of criminals, scam artists, hackers, and even governments. You don't want to leave your data security entirely in the hands of your ISP, or anyone else for that matter. It's up to you to protect yourself using a multi-layered defense strategy. Silent offers you the protection you need to keep your data and devices secure from wireless threats. Their multi-shield technology blocks cellular signals, GPS, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, EMP, RFID, NFC, and more. Silent's lineup includes everything from signal-blocking wallets all the way up to 40 cubic liter Faraday duffel bags. When you're geared up with Silent, you'll be truly disconnected, undetectable, untraceable, and unhackable. And you can now use the discount code SPYCRAFT101 to save 10% off your order from Silent. Find them at slnt.com. That's slnt.com. Meanwhile, unaware of what was happening inside, Jamal's fiancée Hatice was waiting outside. She ended up standing outside the consulate for 10 hours that day, and of course, he never came out. She returned the following day, but once again, he never came out, and no one there would tell her anything more about him. Only that he had left from the rear entrance of the consulate the day prior, shortly after his appointment. The Saudis presumably thought they'd committed the perfect crime, since the consulate is legally considered Saudi territory, and they'd taken steps to ensure Jamal's body wouldn't be found. But apparently, they had not taken into account Turkish President Erdogan. Erdogan had known Khashoggi well and had been amenable to his desire to start a TV news station in Istanbul soon. Just 3 days after he was killed, Erdogan was briefed by his intelligence personnel that they had incontrovertible evidence that he died inside the consulate. Erdogan's staff initially reached out to the Saudi government, but were stonewalled. So he soon initiated a criminal investigation and then announced to the media that his office had evidence of Jamal's violent death. This put the Saudis in a very tenuous position. There was security camera footage of Khashoggi walking into the consulate for his appointment, but he couldn't be located anywhere. And the doppelganger agent who left the consulate in his clothing had already been identified in the media as well. Over time, with increasing media coverage of his disappearance, the official story changed. Journalists around the world got wind that one of their own might have been killed specifically for publishing articles critical of his own country's leadership. So a tremendous number of questions were being asked by many outlets in Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and the United States. The Saudis announced that he had died during a fist fight with officials inside the consulate, and later that he'd suffocated while in a chokehold. But they didn't release his body because they had destroyed it to get rid of the evidence. There are several different theories as to how his remains were disposed of. Some reports indicate it was cut to pieces and transported out of the consulate in a black van not long after he was killed, to be scattered where it would never be recovered. Others believe it was dissolved in acid inside the consulate, or possibly burnt to ash in an oven over a period of 3 days. Regardless of what method was used, none of his remains have been recovered to date. The Tiger Squad wasn't the only organization involved in the hunt for Jamal either. There was another player as well, one that wasn't Saudi at all, but Israeli. At some point, a few months before his death, the kingdom contracted with an Israeli firm called NSO Group to collect information on Jamal and his associates. They did this by installing some very sophisticated spyware on their phones, which would have provided access to all messages, calls, photos, locations, and everything else we use smartphones for. It could even activate the camera and microphones without the owner's knowledge, essentially live streaming whatever they were saying and doing in the vicinity of their phones. NSO Group was reportedly paid $55 million for their assistance by the Saudi government. NSO has been the subject of many news stories and a great deal of attention in recent years. The firm has close ties to the Israeli government, probably not surprising, and has sold its flagship software called Pegasus to many foreign customers. In fact, they can only sell to foreign governments with the permission of the Israeli government. Pegasus has been a hugely effective tool for law enforcement and counterterrorism operations, such as when it was used in Mexico's investigation and eventual capture of Joaquin Guzman, also known as El Chapo, arguably the world's most famous narcotics trafficker. But it's mostly been in the news for its use by many different governments to spy on dissidents, journalists, and business people, just like in the case of Jamal Khashoggi. Pegasus is expensive, but is sold as very user-friendly software, practically a point-and-click asset. No one at NSO is involved in the use of Pegasus on the ground in the client countries after it's been sold, or so they say. But once it's under the control of these various governments, it's often used in ways that NSO Group says it was never intended or sold for. For example, in Mexico, shortly after the capture of El Chapo, Citizen Lab, a research unit based out of the University of Toronto in Canada, found the Pegasus software on the phones of several people working in the healthcare field, all of whom had spoken out about taxing soda sales more heavily in order to combat childhood obesity. The Citizen Lab researchers suspect that someone in the Mexican government with control over Pegasus owed a favor to someone else in the soda industry and offered to help them dig up some dirt on their biggest detractors. The software was also installed on the phones of investigators looking into the very famous disappearance of 43 students from the Ayotzinapa Teachers College in Mexico in 2014. The students are all now believed to be dead, although the remains of only a few have been found. Their deaths are still shrouded in mystery, but were likely killed by corrupt police or military members at the behest of the cartels, which is probably not surprising to anyone. Well, after Jamal's death, the Citizen Lab group examined phones belonging to his wife, Hanan Khashoggi, his fiancée Hatice, and a close associate and fellow dissident named Omar Abdulaziz. Citizen Lab published a report showing the evidence they'd found that Pegasus may have been secretly installed on his wife's phone, although they couldn't be certain. But they definitely found it had been installed on his friend Omar's phone, probably in late 2017, and on his fiancée's phone approximately 4 days after his death. The kingdom had clearly been keeping close tabs on him, waiting for when the time was right and a solution to their problem presented itself. I hope to do an entire episode on Pegasus and NSO Group in the future, but that will depend on me getting the right guest to agree to an interview. So stay tuned after this episode for more on that subject, hopefully soon. Well, once the Turkish government began investigating the crime and making public statements about their findings, the Saudi government eventually decided to declare that a number of rogue officials within their ranks had taken it upon themselves to kill Jamal. The Turkish government was also caught in a difficult diplomatic position. There was a strong desire to maintain good relations with Saudi Arabia, but they couldn't allow a blatant and high-profile murder in Istanbul like this to go unanswered. In late 2019, over a year after his death, and still under immense international pressure, the kingdom put 11 suspects on trial for his murder, under the premise they'd acted without the permission or knowledge of the crown prince. 5 men were sentenced to death, 3 received prison sentences, and 3 others were exonerated and released. Of the 5 who received death sentences, not long afterwards, those sentences were commuted after Jamal's son announced publicly that the family had pardoned his killers. This is a Saudi custom, which means that the families of the convicted men owed so-called blood money settlements to the family of the victim. It appears as though Jamal's family have received millions of dollars since then as recompense. However, his fiancée Hatice did not agree with the pardon and protested that she herself had not and would not pardon anyone involved. The Turkish government eventually indicted 20 men for Jamal's death, long after they had fled the country. Saudi Arabia refused to extradite any of the suspects back to Turkey to stand trial, so in July 2020, their trials began in absentia and continued through April 2022. At that point, the trials were officially transferred by Turkish prosecutors to Saudi Arabia, even though some of the accused had already been tried there and acquitted. That move was met with significant criticism in the media, but by now, more than 3.5 years had passed since Jamal's death, and Turkey was looking to repair its relations with the kingdom. There was other fallout from the case as well. Believe it or not, the pilot, Meshal Saad al-Bastani, who allegedly shot down Prince bin Mokarrem's helicopter in November 2017 and then participated in the killing of Jamal in October 2018, he died just 10 days after Jamal was killed. Al-Bastani was reported to have died in a car accident in Riyadh, but an anonymous source later told Middle East Eye, which is the publication that Khashoggi wrote for, that Al-Bastani was poisoned to close the circle on his involvement in the Tiger Squad killings. It is entirely possible that he died in a regular car accident. Those happen every day, and he appears to have proven himself to be an effective operative carrying out the Crown Prince's wishes, if the stories about him are true. But a coincidence of this magnitude definitely leads to a lot of questions. The U.S. government has also long had very close economic ties and diplomatic relations with Saudi Arabia, despite many problems along the way. So the U.S. government was also caught in the middle, considering that Khashoggi was living in the United States and writing for the Washington Post at the time of his death. So there was relatively little concrete action on the part of the U.S. in the whole affair. However, in February 2021, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence publicly released a declassified report titled Assessing the Saudi Government's Role in the Killing of Jamal Khashoggi. The report summarized an assessment that the Crown Prince approved the operation because he had, quote, absolute control of the kingdom's security and intelligence organizations, making it highly unlikely that Saudi officials would have carried out an operation of this nature without the Crown Prince's authorization, unquote. Khashoggi's murder is going to continue to be a sore spot between all three countries involved for many years to come. But it highlights the very dangerous position that any dissident can find themselves in when they are in the crosshairs of their home country's government. If you're interested in more of Spycraft 101, look for my page on Instagram at Spycraft 101. You can also find more great articles on my website, spycraft101.com. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you'll stick around because there's lots more to come.
Disclaimer. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only. The stories and statements expressed herein are experiences and opinions. They may not reflect the views of the host or the production studio. It's okay if you disagree with our content. No piece of media is right for everyone. If you love Spycraft 101, please check us out online, on Instagram, on YouTube, and especially on Patreon. Thank you for listening.